ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Lisa Kartour again. Sitting on the sideline. He's been through the wars today, it must be said.
It is the concussion episode that has absolutely rattled rugby league. Eli Kartour convulsing with a seizure activity on the sidelines after three heavy head knocks playing for Tonga against New Zealand. Surgery followed. 2026 is out of the question from a playing perspective as rehabilitation continues. The NRL promised to investigate, and this week they released the findings of that report, laying the blame squarely with the medical officials and trainers at the ground. The careers of those men hang in the balance, but the industry is asking whether it's simply a failing of those men or if the system is in desperate need of an overhaul. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Miles Holbrook-Walker's a reporter with 7:30. They've been investigating this story for weeks. That story is going to air Wednesday night. If you miss it, it'll be on ABC iView. Miles, for the uninitiated, tell us, who is Eli Kartour and what happened to the player in the clash between Tonga and New Zealand that has utterly shaken rugby league?
It certainly has, Patrick. It's the biggest story of the off-season for many, I think, who are observing the game. And Eli Kartour's story is incredibly remarkable in rugby league. Born into a very small part of Tonga on a remote island, population less than 200. And he goes on this charmed run as a promising prospect and moves to New Zealand. He then signs on with the New Zealand Warriors before moving to the Melbourne Storm, this absolute sporting juggernaut. He's got this hulking run about him where he plays in the second row. He's quick and strong, and that combination for forwards is just something that really is a rare breed and rare gift in the game, and as such he's been acknowledged for it. 2024, he's named in the Dally M Team of the Year. 2025, he does it again, scores a try in the grand final.
Floats it to the right edge for Hughes, grabber for the end goal area, Eli Kartour wins the race! Blitz the ball and the Storm score their second try to go to the lead!
And then is called up to play for Tonga. Now, that is a huge honour for him as someone who was born there. We see a lot of the Tongan players are often second, sometimes even third generation people who have grown up in New Zealand or Australia, then honouring their kind of ancestors when they represent. For Eli, it's going back to the place it all began. And it's in this crucial game in the Pacific Championships against New Zealand where this incident takes place. I really should say several incidents, because what first happens is in the warm-up, less than an hour before kickoff, they're doing a kick and catch drill, Tonga, and it's here that his teammate, fullback Lehi Hopoate, accidentally collides with Eli Kartour. His shoulder goes right into Eli Kartour's head, and it is really quite a sickening blow. Pretty much everyone across the board acknowledges that. It's the handling that has become this super controversial point. Some people have opined that had this happened in game, there wouldn't even necessarily have been the elongated head injury assessment. He would have come straight from the field and been ruled out for the match. In this instance, though, what Tonga says has happened is that he was looked at by medical officials before game, but they okayed him to go out and play, and they said that they didn't see crucial footage that was broadcast and has become incredibly widely distributed right across the country. And within the sport, people have been asking how it is, of course, this could have happened.
Welcome back. We are edging closer to kickoff between New Zealand and Tonga. These pitches just in from the Tongan warm-up. Eli Kartour on the other end of some friendly fire in the warm-up. He hasn't yet been ruled out, but that is a nasty knock before kickoff.
Yeah, huge collision here with Lehi Hopoate, and the shoulder of Hopoate collects him right in the head. Look at the collision there. Like, it's absolutely brutal.
But the trouble doesn't stop there. Within the first 10 minutes, Kartour actually has friendly fire yet again. He bumps into another member of the Tongan squad on field in a tackle. Now, in this instance, he's pulled off what's called a head injury assessment.
Seeing a player come from the field, Andrew.
It's Eliesa Kartour for Tonga. And remember, he got collected by Lehi Hopoate in the eye in the warm-up. And I think he's had a collision, friendly fire. from Saliva Havili. I don't know what Ellie's done wrong at training, but his teammates are out to get him. He's gone straight into the tunnel for an HIA.
This is the NRL's protocol. Many will be familiar with, where essentially you have to come off the field initially, and that's because this game is monitored by independent doctors who are watching essentially from a surveillance bunker where they've got lots of screens, lots of different camera angles. They pick up on this and they pull him from the field to then assess him to see if he's still okay to play. They then categorise what nature of the head injury has taken place, and they do what's called a SCAT test. Now, essentially, they're looking for balance signs, memory signs, awareness of even where you are, Pat. And it's at that point that he's actually able to pass that test, and after a 15-minute period on the sidelines, re-enters the game.
So as you can see, Eli Couture passed his HIA. He was getting some running repairs. His 15 minutes is running really, really close. They get him on just in time.
We then get into the second half, and yet again, another head blow. Now, because of the NRL standing rules for this tournament, and indeed for any NRL-sanctioned match, essentially, if you have two head injuries, you have to come from the field. You can't go back no matter what. But it's here that we see these really confronting pictures. He's got a cut below his eye, and it looks really unsightly, and he looks in a bad way. Already, people are wondering how it is that he could have remained on the field, and that these two head knocks subsequent to that awful one in the warm-up have been allowed to take place, and that he's experienced it. And things really escalate. They get a lot worse. Eli Couture has a seizure. He has to be wheeled out on a Medicar, and then is actually suffering a bleed on his brain. Goes into surgery in Auckland Hospital, and it's 12 days he ends up spending in hospital before he actually was able to be discharged. So it was an incredibly serious moment. And we haven't seen an injury like this at the top standard of the game for some time. And some say really there isn't another comparable situation in the professional ilk of the game.
Couture won't play in 2026. His club, the Melbourne Storm, made that clear. Rehabilitation is the priority there. The NRL industry, people were shocked by this story because it was clear in the moment that he was not okay. Now, the NRL has investigated. They've released their findings earlier this week. What did they find?
Essentially, what the NRL has found is that there was this breakdown, or a possible breakdown, in communication among medical staff around that very first incident where he gets knocked in the head. It's there that, by Tonga's own admission, they didn't conduct a head injury assessment. And they say, the NRL that is, say that they haven't followed proper protocol to assess a player to ensure that they're right and that their welfare is properly looked after. As a consequence, they've come down hard on three Tongan officials. The head doctor, the assistant doctor, and the head medical trainer have all been banned for 2 years. The assistant medical trainer, a fourth official within Tonga's setup, has been issued a formal warning. Now, they have until the end of the week to respond to this breach notice, but there was so much discussion around what should come of the officials responsible for Eli Couture's welfare. We saw some really high-profile former rugby league players even suggest that officials should be banned for life. Obviously, the NRL hasn't gone that far, but they have said that this was a failure in terms of how his initial incident was handled, and that it should never have got to a situation in game.
What this made me ask is whether this can be directly attributed to three or four professionals, or whether they are working within an imperfect system, a system that is designed to police specifically the 80 minutes of game time, but neglects the warm-up and is maybe not as thorough in the training aspect of things. What are some of the experts you're talking to telling you about that part of this story?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a really interesting point you bring up. Around in-game, there are independent doctors, as I mentioned earlier, who are watching on from a surveillance bunker to ensure that players who might sustain any sort of sometimes innocuous head knocks, even to the layman's eye, are looked after and assessed properly. Even in warm-ups, less than an hour before kickoff, there's no independent monitoring. And so it's really on club officials. Some people say that creates a huge problem, including Alan Pearce, who's a neuropathologist and studies concussion, has done so for more than a decade.
You know, if the NRL are serious about athlete health and well-being, then this is as much in the warm-ups, as much in the cool-downs, not just in the game itself. It shouldn't be just only the game. You know, this extends to all aspects of the game if the NRL are very serious about athlete brain health.
He also wants to see training monitored, so week-to-week training where we're not on game day, there are fewer cameras, and that's what he's also identified as a key point to look at. he's not alone with his concerns about training. We also heard from the Rugby League Players Association, who actually have in the process of releasing their latest Players Pulse or Player Survey. And essentially they found that across the last 12 months, 29% of all male players in the NRL suffered a suspected concussion in training. Now, what's particularly interesting is the majority of them, 60% of them, continued training even after having a suspected concussion. So they're positing that essentially there are gaps that are emerging.
We need to take into account that, you know, players either aren't comfortable reporting, you know, they're not reporting, definitely, these percentage, but then also, you know, are these being identified? Are we doing enough to identify potential concussions?
As for why that's happening, it's a little bit harder to know because each case is an individual. What we do know is what happens at training at the moment is that every club has what's called a spotter, and these people are appointed by their club. They're accredited with the NRL, and so the governing body knows who they are. And essentially, they are trained to spot concussion and to conduct basic concussion tests, as well as if they do see someone who thinks they're not quite moving the way they usually should be in training and they look a little different, they can also refer them onto the club doctor after a suspected head knock for more follow-ups and indeed to assess, does a player need to stop having any contact and indeed stop playing the sport for a minimum period? The NRL's yardstick at the moment is 11 days unless a doctor gives them special clearance.
So the career of these three or four professionals, they hang in the balance, but is there a sense that the challenge is way bigger than three or four medicos who were working in an end-of-season international, and any sense from the NRL they might review the structures as well as the process?
Well, at the moment, and at least from this initial findings that they've issued with the breach notices, they haven't spoken about a change in process. So that's a really critical element that, as I say, the Rugby League Players Association want to look at.
If there are things they've found in the investigation that we can improve, I think as a game what we've shown is we're always willing to improve, and that's everybody. It's not an RLPA thing, an NRL thing, you know, an international thing. I think if there's things that need to change, that improve, that are going to, you know, make our product better, make it safer, I would imagine that the game alongside everyone else is going to be eager to plug them gaps for sure.
There are ex-players as well who think it's not too big a jump to say let's at least have independent monitoring on game day of warm-ups as well. The logistics of it could present a challenge because essentially where a game follows the ball, largely speaking, this would be two teams training on other sides of the field. Sometimes teams don't even warm up on the field. They'll warm up in their changing rooms as well. So it would be more complex. But essentially the argument is after seeing what happened to Eli Katoa, whose career hangs in the balance, as you say, he's not playing next season. It's something that the ubiquitous view is that can never happen again, and that jump should at least take place. Whether the NRL will follow suit on that, it very much remains to be seen, Patrick.
You can catch Miles Holbrook Walks full story on 7:30. Miles, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Headlines. Imagine being the English cricket team right now. You are down 2-0 in the series. You're trying to enjoy a freshen up in Noosa while the entire cricketing world rolls its collective eyes. And now you get the news that Pat Cummins is back in the Aussie squad for the Adelaide Test. The skipper's in the 15-man group for the third test and appears primed to return to the 11. Also in that squad, Usman Khawaja, who still might add to his 85 tests. The tourists won't be able to call on tearaway quick Mark Wood, who's been ruled out of the remainder of the series. He is fearsome when fit, but his total Ashes contribution with the ball this series, 11 overs. Yikes. Oh, and we should mention, WA fast bowler Joe Richardson will join the Australian group in Adelaide. He's building capacity as part of his return to play program. Have you kept an eye on the Mo Salah situation at Liverpool? The star striker's taken aim at manager Arne Slot and the Reds, saying the club has, quote, thrown him under the bus. You'd assume he's trying to get out of Liverpool for whatever reason. The Reds beat Inter Milan 1-0 in the Champions League overnight in Italy, and Salah was not in the group. Have a listen to this exchange between Slot and Dutch legend Clarence Seedorf on the matter.
Do you have the intention, though, to bring him back? Like, because that is our view, right? I would love to see that happen because everybody makes mistakes in life. Things happen and you always have the spirit. What is your spirit, which we can...
Yeah, but then you say everyone makes mistakes in life. So the first thing should be, does the player think he's made a mistake as well?
The Perth Bears have landed Penrith Premiership forward Liam Henry. It's the first time the NRL expansion club has jagged a player who is currently in the system here. Toby Sexton and Harry Newman have also been confirmed, but They are presently contracted to teams in the Northern Hemisphere. A real tearjerker to finish from the AFL. Hawthorn's Cal Shadier will wear the number 13 jumper in 2026. Why is that significant? It's the same number his late father, Paul, wore representing the Hawks. Now, Dylan Moore had the jumper over the last couple of seasons and repeatedly offered it to Kalsha in previous seasons gone. Deer has taken his teammate up on the offer. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Fox League, New Zealand Rugby League and Prime Video for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.